Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard the Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association. The bulk of our episodes are okay for entire families to listen to, but this one touches on some mature content. Parental discretion is advised.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast. So excited for you guys to join us again. For all those regular listeners out there that are staying active on social media, reviewing us on iTunes, keeping those likes, shares, and comments coming, we really appreciate it. We're honored by having you guys follow us.
If it's your first time listening, thank you for finding us. We've got a good one for you today. And please, if you like what you hear, please give us a review. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, all the social media platforms are out there and available. And please give us a review and tell us what we can do to take this farther.
And yeah, guys, a couple episodes ago, we had Mr. Kyle Kinzer on, who talked a pretty... a pretty rough path that he's been through, and reaching out to find out people who've kind of went that same way to help and raise awareness and raise advocacy of it. I think we have found one today. I know we have found one. It's one that's been getting a lot of press and that's doing the right thing out there. And with that, I will introduce our guest who we have on the phone, Mrs. Carla Nimitz. Born and raised out in Woodlake, California, which she told me is Central California.
She wouldn't pick. We said NorCal or SoCal, but she wouldn't pick.
Yeah, pretty sure you got to pick sides out there, but that's okay. She joined the Coast Guard back in the summer of 2011, was with Recruit Company India 185. First unit out of there was the brand new, I'm sure, at the time, Coast Guard Cutter Stratton, 420 National Security Cutter, home ported in Alameda. Did some time as a non-rate there, got picked up on the list for Electrician's Mate A School out in Yorktown, was class 0613, graduated as an Electrician's Mate 3rd class, first assignment was Sector Sault Ste. Marie. I don't even know what state that's in, I don't know how to spell it.
That's the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, it's Canada.
Really. It's cold, that's what I knew, yeah,
it was bring
cold.
Your long underwear.
Right, and did some time there in 2016, got transferred to the Coast Guard Cutter Mellon. Did about 6 months and then took a temporary separation and later separated fully from the service after, a full tour of honorable service. She now works as a construction electrician, most notably as a Coast Guard artist. I think she told us described her as going from the petty officer to pinup artist program, which is pretty cool. Her art's gaining a lot of traction out there. If you guys haven't seen it, we'll tell you where you can find it at the end of the episode. And she's in the middle of a move to Alaska. So we really appreciate her coming on the show.
You really like the cold, don't you, Carla?
I'm going from the frying pan to the freezer. I'm in South Texas right now.
Right, but I mean, you spent that time in Sault Ste. Marie. Obviously, you're a cold weather person.
I didn't really have a choice. I was doing the whole military spouse deal, so.
Good point.
Pack me in the sea bag.
So. There you go.
Hey, and I told all you guys that, that you know, we were interviewing someone that's doing a lot for veterans and to raise awareness. So Carla's been on the Women's Leadership Forum after she got out. She definitely got her hooks into the advocacy part, trying to raise awareness of a ton of issues, both women and veteran suicide. She did the 22-hour March in March, which was a ruck march that supports veteran suicide awareness and prevention, with the proceeds going to StopSoldierSuicide.org. And she manages her own ruck club right now where she's at. So with that, I think we're going to get a really good story out of this.
I think we're going to get a great answer to the question. And the question, as always, is, Carla, what's your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
So the most dangerous situation that I believe that I was in, or anyone of any military branch could be in, is one where you just stop caring. It affects personnel, it affects your work, and it affects the overall mission of the Coast Guard or whatever branch you happen to be in. So when I was stationed in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, I experienced a sexual assault. And on a physical level, it wasn't too painful, but the fact that it was a very trusted and very high-ranking individual, I blame myself repeatedly. Victim blaming, I never really understood it until I went through it myself. And I was very lucky to have a victim advocate that informed me of a tactic called grooming. And grooming is pretty much a predatory tactic used by somebody in power. And we've seen this in the news, throughout Hollywood, in the other branch of the military, where somebody that has a high position of power finds somebody that they know they can target. And it started with little things I didn't even notice. Call me by my first name, have me come to his house to do minor electrical projects, asking me for favors, giving me gifts. I didn't think anything much of it. So what he did is that he built up this trust in me. He even passed down his second class crows to me. So he was a huge mentor and a father figure. So when he did what he did to me and completely betrayed my trust, I was so far broken and so far done. He knew he could manipulate me, which led to a lot of victim blaming. So the investigation lasted for only 3 months, and he was punished for it, but it really sent me into a spiral of anxiety and depression, and I was really hoping that when I got transferred to the Mellon, it would help me, you know, fresh start, fresh crew, fresh area, start over. This will be good. I had really high hopes. I was, you know, making a few friends on the ship, like, all right, I got this. This is going to be fine. I'm going to stay in. Everything's going to be okay. But, you know what they say, it's a small Coast Guard. So because I got there in February out of the normal rotation, people started talking. I didn't really mesh with the crew. I felt like an outsider. And, of course, you know, I still had the really bad anxiety and depression issues. And it was at that point, after about 5 months on board, that I just stopped caring. And the reason why I say that's dangerous to the person is because I just didn't care what happened next. I was experiencing a lot of suicidal thoughts, but I knew that I wouldn't go through with it. I feel like I'd be too much of a coward to actually go through with it. But I was very lucky to talk to my chief. He noticed that I was going to this downward spiral. Even saying the name of the rank of the man that sexually assaulted me really did number on me. That was really hard for me to get over as well. He was very high ranking, and I refuse to say his name. He doesn't. That's not necessary at all. So I was able to qualify for a temporary separation, which kind of blew my mind. I was very lucky that it came out that month. I noticed that month is when the combat instruction for temporary separation came out. And what qualified me for it is that I made an unrestricted report of a sexual assault within the past 2 years. I really don't think CGIS is passing that information to enough sexual assault victims to say, hey, you don't have to be stuck here. And the thing about the temporary separation instruction that came out, you can get out for 2 years and then come back in. It's a temporary separation, or there's no obligation to come back in either. So it's a better option and you should be an honorable discharge, it's a better option for sexual assault victims. So I'm gonna kind of lead up to that in a little bit. So got out, got my DD214, fresh start, moved out of Texas, and working as an electrician, going to HVAC school, and I follow a few Facebook pages with, you know, Coast Guard influence. And I saw that we lost a young female petty officer, MK3 Christina Cooley, to suicide. Like, wait, what? No way. Like, the Coast Guard lose people to suicide? Nope. Like, really? No way. I was really, really mind blown. And then the more information that I found out that she went through two sexual assaults. And good Lord, I felt so guilty. Like, really? Why is it that I got help and she didn't? What happened? What's going on? Was she not told about this temporary separation instruction? So I was really sad. I was really angry. And I didn't know what to do. I knew I wanted to do something because I was having a really bad case of survivor's guilt.
Carla, one question. You know, when you said that she got her, like, she didn't get help, right? I'm just curious, from your standpoint, when it happened, right, and when you reported it, did you get kind of that immediate help that you needed to make sure that, yeah, I don't want to say okay, but to make sure that, you know, you were safe.
Safe's
and that,
the word.
Yeah, safe's the word, and that things were gaining traction, right, to get to a resolution.
I did feel safe. It really came in handy. One of my roommates was an ET. And he was extremely supportive. We had a really platonic relationship, and I would tell him that, hey, sometimes I'm afraid to go out. And he goes, Carla, no, you shouldn't be the one afraid to go out. He should be. But you know, nonetheless, whenever I wanted to go out by myself, he would always accompany me. We'd hang out a lot. So, no, I had a good support group. They did put me in counseling, and I didn't go to counseling as much as I should because I didn't want to tell the story anymore. I felt like I was being re-victimized, and I just didn't want to talk about it.
Right.
Being in Sault Ste. Marie was really nice because there's so many national parks, so a lot of my therapy to myself just came from going out on hikes, being in nature, being by myself. So it was very, very healing.
The best kind of therapy, for sure. I think, yeah for anybody.
Yeah, and it is a beautiful, when it's not buried in snow, it is actually a really pretty area.
When it's not negative 28 with blowing wind, it's great.
Yep.
You know, I'm gonna head to the island national parks or something. Maybe avoid those. Well, Carla, what about the command? You know, when you reported it, you know, I know that you had immediate support, right, in the form of your roommate and your shipmate. But organizationally, I guess, how did it go? Was everything? Did you feel like it was a professionalized kind of response to help you?
It could have been better. The way C just handled it probably could have been a little bit better, but then again, I realize they're just trying to do their job, because at first I didn't want to say anything. I was scared. My EO found me crying in the shop, and I didn't want to say anything. I said, no, this is my fault. And looking back, I can't believe that I thought that. So it just goes to show how far in the rabbit hole he had me manipulated, that I was so convinced that I did this to myself. And my own kind of therapy, besides going out, you know, in the woods and hiking and wrestling bears and measuring waterfalls. Recently, I did a illustration story talking about my sexual assault as a way to kind of move forward a little bit. And the response that I've gotten back from other women that have experienced this said, Carla, you hit it on the head. This is exactly what I went through. I haven't been able to express it before until I saw your comic. Thank you. So it makes my heart swell knowing that sharing my pain and my story and my recovery has the potential to help others that went through the same ordeal.
For sure. All right. I'm sorry I interrupted. So we can go back to you had seen that, you know, a shipmate committed suicide, right? You kind of learned her background, and it sounded like it was sparking you into action.
Yes. I did make note. I contacted some of the people she was stationed with. She did have a good support group, but the way the command handled it was not the best. She did have like a Coast Guard mom figure that she had. She had a lot of good friends there, and she was they described her as just this total upbeat, eccentric, just happy-go-lucky gal. But she hid her depression so well. She was balled inside until she just snapped. So in a weird twist of fate, I'm volunteering at the VA, and I see a flyer for a 22-hour ruck march for veteran suicide awareness. I'm like, this got to be fate. So I signed up that night, and little did I know, this was the very first year that was being put on by my Marine Corps friend, Rob Cavazos. He's a local here in South Texas. So I signed up. It's like, okay, I need to do something more. What can I do to kind of bring, kind of make this a group effort? So I had this idea of making these little wooden whales that said, just keep swimming on one side. And I took a picture, posted it online, said, hey, in response to Nkethia Kuli's suicide, I want to do the Spruck March in her honor. If you pledge me $10, I will make you a whale, and I'll carry it in my bag all 22 hours of the ruck march, and then I'll mail it to you once the ruck march is done, and once I deduct shipping costs, all the money will be donated to stopsoldiersuicide.org. So I posted that late one night, went to bed, woke up the next morning. I had over 100 requests for whales. I was thinking maybe like 15 or 20. No. In a matter of a week, I was running around all the different stores stealing pallets for decent wood and staying up till midnight in my husband's shop with a jigsaw. And I had to cut out 106 little wooden whales, like sanded them, everything, spray painted them, wrote on them, clear coated them. Oh, it was so much work, but it was so, so worth it. So worth it. I was only going to college in the mornings at the time, so I was very lucky that I had time to do all this.
And really then you realize you had to ship them. That's the worst part.
I think carrying them on the 22-hour mark. I hope you used a nice balsa wood, something nice and light, not some oak or anything there.
Yeah, it was pine, so it was not too bad. The pack weighed about 20 pounds. By the time I was all done, they were all packed in there. So
that's tolerable.
We had a water trailer.
Dude, that's tolerable. Did you? You know what? Let's just say something, Carla. Like, I want to say you're going on a 22-mile ruck march now. The next one hits. Yeah, we're both doing it. Let's do it.
I think. All right. Let us know the next time one's happening. Phil and I are coming.
Yep, we're doing a ruck march.
Awesome. Now, what's really cool? It is common to have like the 22-mile ruck marches. But my Marine friend, Rob Cavazos, he wanted to go extreme. Nobody's done a 22-hour ruck before.
Yeah, Bill's on that one.
No, I volunteered for 22 miles.
Bill's on board for 22 hours. I'll do the 22-miler.
I tell you what, it is all mental. It is all mental.
And what gave you the idea, Carlo, of the whales? Was it just like, I'm just curious, why whales? I can think of a few different parallels, I guess, but I wonder if you had a specific one.
Well, the idea behind the whales came to me when I went to a counseling session at the VA, and I was talking to the guy, and I told him that, hey, it's been over a year since my sexual assault. I'm trying to get over it. And he said, don't say that. Don't say you're trying to get over it. This affected you, and it's going to affect you for the rest of your life. It changed you for better or worse. Don't say you're going to get over it. Because you won't, and that's okay. But what you can do is move forward from it. And to me, that's exactly what Just Keep Swimming translates to. Keep moving forward. We've all gone through super traumatic things in our lives, things that we can barely cope through, things we cope just fine through. And even though we don't fully get over it, we do move forward from it. And that's where we're really going to make progress, in my mind, with veteran suicide prevention.
Very cool.
Yeah, very well said.
Thank you.
All right, I interrupted you again. I think that was me again. I don't know.
No, it was.
Okay.
It definitely was.
Sorry. Where were we? Does anybody remember? I lost it.
She was telling us about how she started the ruck. You were telling us about how you started the ruck march and or how you found out about it. You were volunteering at the VA at the time, and you made the whales. I think that's where we were.
There we go.
Yep. So I got all the whales together, and what was really wild, because I had a few people message me, and asking me, hey, one of my good friends in the Coast Guard, we watched this suicide a few years ago, can you put their name on the back of the whale? Sure, of course. So I made a huge Excel spreadsheet of every single name, how many whales, how much they donated, what name do you want on the whale. And I kind of put that out there, like, hey, you'd like a name on the back of your whale, I'd be happy to add it. I got flooded with messages. I'm like, whoa, whoa, these are all COSIs? What's going on here? And so I had so many names all over the place, and it really clicked, like, are we losing this many? I had no idea. So after the Wreck March was over and all the funds were collected, one of my prouder moments, in a matter of 4 days, I already collected over $1,600 for StopSoldierSuicide.org. I was absolutely overwhelmed at the amount of support that was coming in through here. So it just, to me, it just goes to show that this is a hidden issue that is slipped under the rug all too often in our service.
For sure. And I think, so too, it also shows that, you know, these aren't just names, right? These are people that have people left behind that care about them and, you know, care about them enough to support trying to prevent it among others and pay to do that, right? So, yeah, I mean, that's huge.
Absolutely. So after the Wreck March was over, I was able to send off all the whales. Went great. Huge success. And I was reviewing the list of all the COSI that we've lost. And like, okay, this isn't right. And so I started doing some more research, and I got a great book called The Study of a Secret Society, Resistance to Open Discussion of Suicide in the United States Coast Guard. And it's by Stephanie Steinmetz. It reads a lot like a research paper, so it was a little bit tricky to go through, but the author talks about how she wanted to do this study, and she would get in touch with people. Oh, yeah, we'll help you. We'll help you. This sounds great. Go for it. And then they end up get back to her. So it so many times during this book, she would get really, really close, and then her contacts would just drop out. So thus the title of, you know, Open Resistance, Open Discussion. But it's a great book. She interviews members of the Coast Guard, members of other branches to make comparisons. It's a great book. I definitely recommend it.
What was her conclusion, Carla? Conclusions, I guess. Like, what was kind of the outcome of the book? I'm just curious.
The outcome of the book.
I guess I'm cheating right now. I'm asking for spoilers.
Yeah.
Well,
you'll have to read it to find out.
I know. Yeah.
That's okay. I mean, I'm trying to remember the exact date, but I believe it was 2012, where the Coast Guard had a higher suicide percentage than the other four branches. I believe it was 2012. But just the fact that it was 1 year that we had a higher percentage of the rest of the branches is extremely depressing, especially when we have such a smaller number in comparison to the other four branches.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, and the other branches are, you know, not with suicide, right? But I mean, they're built to absorb attrition and loss, and the Coast Guard is not that way. I mean, you're talking small crews where the loss of one person, regardless of the reason, is impactful, right?
Well, one of the reasons that she reached in her book that she came to the conclusion of, because everybody says the Coast Guard is like a family, that can be good or bad. Yeah, it's like a family, we're close, but when you have a family, your expectations are higher. There's more pressure on you. I have to do it perfectly. I have to do it right. I can't screw up. So it can be a positive or a negative thing.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think back to what you said earlier, it's a really small Coast Guard, right? Usually you hear, that's in a good, positive light, like, hey, I'm always going to see somebody I know. But then in your case, you know, it can also take a negative view. Because in that small Coast Guard, stories travel fast.
Right. It's, sometimes you need to be anonymous, and it's almost impossible.
Yep. So through reading the book, doing online research, going to Coast Guard social media forums, I pretty much said, hey, these are all the names I've collected so far. Start giving me names. And I couldn't believe the amount that flooded in. So I started making a list, and I included the rate, the rank, their first and last name, and the date that we lost them. So for the past 2 years, I've had this kind of unofficial list. And some people treat it like an official list, like, oh, where can I find this on Global? Like, no, guys, this is a Word document on my computer. This is just my own personal thing. So I have to explain that. but it was just so heartbreaking the more names that came in. And of course, the Facebook page, U.S. Coast Guard Veterans, has a lot of the, you know, older, more senior vets that are on there. So from them, I was able to get names dating all the way back to 1976. And so far, as of today, I have 172 names on my list of codes that was off to suicide. And if you look at, you know, the 1980s, 1970s, it's very, very small numbers. And somebody asked me about that, like, wow, so there's not a lot of people back then. I'm like, no, it was just slipped under the rug more. It was probably more the same, because when you look at everything from 2009 onward, we averaged 10 a year. Even in 2019, we already lost 4.
Wow.
And that's only the ones that we've known about. Where my husband was stationed at Station SPI, they had a guy where he got out and just kind of did his own thing, didn't really work, kind of a downward spiral, and they found him dead in his house. He overdosed on drugs. So when you pull up scenarios like that, was it intentional? Was it accidental? Was it suicide? We don't really know. So when you throw in those situations, these numbers could be extremely higher.
Right, I could see that. Yeah, I mean, that's, and you know, like you said, when the numbers slack off in the 70s and 80s, those, the people that were around then also are a little harder to get in touch with these days, you know, even right. with social media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to talk to somebody that just got out or that's dealing with it right now. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's a, like you said, unofficial list. It's terrible that we have to have a list no matter what. Wow.
Actually, I'm going through 2015 on my list here. We've lost... So in 2015 alone, we lost 14 Coast Guard members to suicide. Which, granted, doesn't seem like a big number, but when you look at the percentage-wise of how small we are as a service, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking a grand total 40,000 member force, right? And that, I mean, that's people in a lot of different areas, a lot of different stages of career. That's a huge number, I would think.
And what's really a good, an interesting perspective, there's every single rate, every single rank on here. I have chiefs, I have officers, I have enlisted, I have warrants. There's a little bit of everybody on here. Suicide affects everybody. It doesn't matter what job you have. You have no idea what somebody's going through. You have no idea what their past was. And I'm at a point right now where I'm fortunate to have gotten my name out there so far, to where when there is a suicide in the Coast Guard, contact Carla. She has a list. She keeps in touch with it. And so for the next Ruck March, after I collect all these names, I did the whales again, but I had a few this year, which no big deal. And I took the list and I put "This is why I ruck" at the top, and I safety pinned it to my bag. And I had about 20 pounds or so last year. So the first year I did it for NKPUKUI, the second year I did it for everybody. And then this year in 2019, the list just kept getting longer. And I pinned it in my bag again.
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor. We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 theme storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, you can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT. That's impactful, Carlos. I mean, that's why it's silent. Just trying to process it, you know, trying to think of...
Dead air is not a good thing, but it's just such a big thing, and it's really commend and appreciate you being here and kind of talking to us about it, because it's, there's such a, I think that the title of that book about the secret society about open. It really is. People are just so uncomfortable talking about it that then they just don't bother talking about it. And it's tough to find the words for sure.
Well, when I got invited to New Orleans for the Women's Leadership Symposium, I was invited by Senior Chief Christy Hamilton. Great woman. I was so thankful that she reached out to me. For a while, they didn't think that the event was even going to happen because of the government shutdown that we had just a few months prior. But fortunately, it went through. They had me there. I was able to put my booth up. I assisted with stuff there. They had me design their logo, which I call the Rosie Coastie. It's a woman in a spa uniform doing the Rosie the Riveter pose. So that became their main logo.
Oh,
I was very,
awesome.
Very grateful that. Yeah, so my artwork became the logo and the coin. So I was very, very grateful for that. I got to meet some amazing women, and it was so humbling to show up and have people walk up to me. Oh, your art by Carla. I follow your page. Oh, your art by Carla. I bought one of your prints. It feels so amazing. I'm reaching so many people. And oh, your art by Carla. I saw what you did for the Rug March. That's amazing. Oh, here. I'm the one that gave you this name. So it's been really great how many people I've been able to reach with this. So they also let me speak for 15 minutes at the Women's Symposium. And Senior Chief Hamilton even asked me, hey, you know, talk about what you do with the suicide, with the ruck marches, but try not to make it depressing. I'm like, you got it. So, yes, it's a sad topic. It's a terrible topic. And that's why nobody wants to talk about it, like you said before. But not talking about it, not going to help it. So one of the things that I really like to push is that the way we're going to get prevention is through awareness. And the research that I've done, because I did get assist qualified. I recommend that every active duty, or even if you're not active duty, get assist qualified. It's a two-day class, and it teaches you how to talk down somebody who is suicidal. Now, granted, they may be too far gone, but at least they had a better chance with you there than with you not there. And one main reason behind suicidal thoughts is when your pain outweighs your ability to cope with the pain. So you need to find a way to decrease your pain or increase your coping ability. Everybody's gone through dark times in their lives. Everyone has different coping levels. For the Coast Guard, for every branch in general, if we could find a way to either decrease the pain or increase the coping strategies, that's how we're going to prevent it. And when it comes to training that we have, everybody knows it's a joke. Even Mattis said PowerPoint is making us stupid. What I don't like right now about the way the Coast Guard is handling suicide prevention training, what I remember, granted, I've been out for a few years, but it was always look out for your shipmates, look for these signs, look for these symptoms. Look out for your shipmates, look out for your shipmates. What about those who don't show it? You can get a card from the VA that says, you know, Veterans Crisis Line, here's the number, press 1 for veterans. And on the back, it has a list, signs and symptoms of suicide. I had a gal contact me and say, I absolutely love that card because now I knew how not to act so nobody suspected anything.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Now what?
Yeah.
Yeah, now what?
Yeah,
so
you know,
I really think
wow.
If we change...
Yeah, what a man, that just,
change,
that's eye-opening. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I'm really passionate about this, so sorry for interrupting. Now, my big thing, I really... One of my mom's favorite quotes is, you can have change without progress, but you can't have progress without change. And right now, I really believe if we change the way that we approach suicide, instead of the constant... Look out for your shipmates. Look out for your shipmates. If we approach it more of, hey, are you okay? Are you having some issues? Here's some resources that you can choose. Let's shift it as if we're training, talking the person who is suicidal. Because a lot of people feel that if they come forward with suicidal thoughts, it's like an automatic discharge. You may not ask for your D-214. And who knows if you'll get college benefits or whatever discharge you're going to get. So if there's a way... Because there's plenty of people that I've talked to, they love the Coast Guard. They want to stay in the Coast Guard, but they need help. There's an extremely heartbreaking video that I saw of an Air Force spouse that lost her husband to suicide, he came back from overseas, and he was having nightmares, not sleeping, not coping. And she said, you need to go see a counselor. And he goes, I can't. I'll lose my security clearance. Now what?
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm thinking too, like, you know, when I was younger, I think, like, you're pretty much invincible, and you, I'm thinking from an operational standpoint, right? Because I was at Station Golden Gate, and we recovered suicides all day long, right? Like, all the time. And you would see that stuff, and you just kind of brushed it off. Well, it's funny now, like, being, you know, a little older, hopefully a little wiser, right? Seeing these guys come back, and the amount of struggle that they had with the mission itself, not to mention like their home lives and, you know, whatever else was going on. And I think CISM, right? CISM is kind of like an internal, that critical incident stress management.
Yep.
Something bad happens, you know, you see a trauma victim, commands or whoever can pretty much request these guys to come in, and all they do is facilitate the conversation. But the cool thing is the conversation happens between everybody wearing blue, right? And I don't think, like you just said, we definitely do not have that on the suicide front. Well, even, or in, maybe not even suicide, maybe going too far, right? Like,
right,
maybe just the mental health front, the hey, how are you feeling today, do you need somebody to talk to kind of front.
I agree, and I think it definitely, especially depending on your particular job, people, you know, oh, I'll lose my flight status, and they're in a flight job. Yep. Well, I'm nothing now. Or, you know, you're in the intelligence world, and oh, I'll lose my security clearance. And that's just not how it should be. And I think what really struck me, Carla, you bring up is I never thought of it that way, but with the training, we're looking out for other people, which always kind of makes the issue of suicide like somebody else's problem, as opposed to, like you're saying, really look at yourself, because if we ask everybody that question, we're going to find the people, as opposed to just kind of looking randomly at these particular signs and symptoms.
Exactly.
Yeah. And like with CISM even, right? Like I'm thinking, we've almost built a culture now. I remember when it first started, like it was kind of stupid as it continued to happen. And then as you hear people say, man, I'm really struggling, like that messed me up, all of a sudden it becomes incredibly useful. Because that person gets an opportunity to tell it, you know, and then we can all kind of take that in and try and help them out, and at least, if nothing else, be more aware for them, right? I totally would agree, and there's no backlash during those schism times, right? Like if somebody comes out and the tears start flowing because you saw, you know, some horrific, you know, trauma to a child or something, right? Nobody judges you. Nobody talks about losing certifications or quals. Suicide is totally different. Like you said, Bill, it's probably more of a, hey, here's the number to EAP. You know, right. Do you need help? Do we need to take you to the hospital kind of thing?
Right. We all know the, you know, Ask Care Escort, which, I mean, I get for an organization, we want to get somebody to a higher level of medical care right away, but most people don't know anything beyond that. Like they want to get them somewhere else because they do care and they want to make them safe, but right. We don't teach anybody anything beyond that.
Or anything before that point, right? Like before the suicide happens.
And CISM's great. I'm sorry, Carla, I think we're having a conversation ourselves here. Please
jump in.
Please jump in.
Yeah. You
please,
feel free to tell us we're all way off base. We're solving the world's problems over
right.
here.
We're doing what we do, but please jump in if we're off base or if you've got anything to add.
No, it's okay. I was going to comment with the CISM thing. I had a friend that was stationed at Station Golden Gate, and they have a permanent CISM there because the majority of cases that they do are jumpers from the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yep. Yeah, they're not pretty, right? I mean, it's and yeah.
What I was going to say though, I think, you know, we're good at, maybe not as good as we need to be, but we've gotten better in the time I've been around and seen with dealing with those kind of traumatic things. But every human being's different, and you don't know everybody's story, and what's traumatic to you may not be traumatic to me, or vice versa. And that's where it comes back to that.
Right.
Just asking everybody to the point of almost being annoying, like, how are you, like, really, how are you doing? Not that morning greeting of, hey, how's it going?
Right. It goes back to Kinzer, right? Like when Kinzer said, hey, I've dealt with these rough times. Nobody really asked me how I was doing. But then is there a, you know, should there be a stopgap in between too, in between suicide and just having a rough day? What do we do then?
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of my good friends was a EMT, and he saw extremely gruesome stuff during his time in. And I asked him if it bothered him. He goes, you know, yes. Every single day, you know, I'd have nightmares about it. It would bother me. You know, I would overthink it. But the day that it stopped bothering me at all, that I became numb to it, that's the day that it really started to worry me.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Sorry, Carly, you got us fired up because you quoted your mom, you quoted James Mattis, in one yeah, sentence, you know? Like, it's got to fire you up.
No, I've grown very, very passionate about this topic, and it's one of those things to where, and I know it sounds weird, but I love talking about it because I really think the more we talk about it, the more that we normalize talking about it, people are going to be less afraid to step up for it. Because right now, I really think there's a fear of coming forward. You know, I don't want to get discharged. I love the Coast Guard, but I'm just going through a tough time right now.
Yeah, and we're a humanitarian organization, right, you know, hell-bent on saving every life we can. It's pretty unfortunate that we haven't reduced those numbers, if not eliminated them, in both fronts, right? In the sexual assault front and in the suicide prevention front. So what's next, Carla? What's the initiative? You know, where are you moving out next? What's the plan?
See if I can continue to do maybe a 22 mile every March along with my group here in South Texas. But
well, call Fel and I. We told you we're in. We're in for the next one.
And Carly, you remember, do you know the Run to Remember? You've heard of that, right?
Yes, I have heard of Run to Remember.
Yeah, so I know the coordinator of Run to Remember personally, or one of the founding fathers of that thing, and I think he and you could collaborate pretty well to get that word out, and it's a pretty cool message. So I'll definitely pass your number after that, but maybe, I mean,
yes, definitely.
Bill and I could travel to Alaska, or we could host one here, yeah, sponsor, absolutely, you know, like under your banner, right? The banner that you created. Especially when Bill's out there 22 hours with like 400 pounds
hours
on his back.
22 pounds.
Yeah. 222 miles.
One thing that we did offer this year that we didn't do last year, we have a relay option. So if you don't feel like doing all 22 hours by yourself, you can get a team together and just pass off your pack to different members.
And since we are a coastal organization, you can make all, 55,000 miles of the U.S. coastline? Right? Oh, man, that would be a feat, wouldn't it? Border Patrol's got to carry it across the Rio Grande.
I think putting one one foot in front of the other for 22 hours is quite a feat.
Or a relay, Bill. Yeah. Okay, it's a relay. You
well,
like,
yeah. I don't think Carla did a relay. She did it.
Yeah, she did it. She did the whole thing. Yeah.
And
I was actually going to mention that between me and Rob, the host of the event, you know, it was the third time in 2019, the third time we've done this, and we're there, and it's like 3 a.m. We're at one of our stops. We got water and snacks, and we're both just dying. And it's like, we can't stop, can we? Because we have a vehicle there, so if you drop out, they'll take you back to your car at the memorial. But we're looking at each other like, we can't drop out. We have to finish. So a lot of it was mental.
Yeah.
So, oh, my God, I was aching. I was sore. But just put one foot in front of the other. A lot of people got really bad blisters. Thankfully, we did have some medical staff that were volunteering that helped bandage people up. But only 50% of the people finish all 22 hours.
That's awesome.
Wow. I'm just going to throw Bill some Motrin from the support car. Here you go.
I'm good. I'm good. I'm down. But no, seriously, Carla, let us know. We'll keep in touch about that next year. I think that's something we'd actually be really excited to try and take part in.
Yeah, it's an annual event in Harlingen, Texas.
Awesome.
And I'm very proud that I'm very proud that I was one of the helpers that really helped push it and make it happen. And it all happened with perfect timing. If I know a lot of people don't really believe in fate or the whole everything happens for a reason. I think that's been like my entire life. If I would have never joined the Coast Guard, had the experience that I experienced, you know, met my husband, came down to South Texas, got involved with this, I would never be where I am now. So despite kind of the bitter past that I've had, I'm very proud of where I am now. And I want to continue making a difference as much as I can wherever I go.
Cool. Rightfully so. You should be proud. Just raising the awareness, number one, but then, you know, all the other efforts that you're into, including your art, right? Like, your art is, taking off. I saw, where can people find it?
The best place where I put most of it is on Facebook at Art by Carla. I'm still working on my Instagram page. My Instagram page is Instagram at art.by.carla. Still a work in progress, but the majority of my stuff gets uploaded to Facebook. Right now, I'm doing a mental health series called What If You Could See It, where I'm addressing issues like PTSD, anxiety, anorexia nervosa, and in relation to, like we were talking about earlier with the suicide, so many people don't show symptoms. And what was so depressing, whenever somebody would contact me saying, hey, I have a name for you to add, I was staged with this person, they committed suicide, one of the main things I would ask is, okay, what signs did they show? And consistently, I was told we had no idea. That's what drives me absolutely nuts. What can we do for those that show no symptoms? Which is why my idea came to me of changing the way that we train. Instead of doing the whole putting all the pressure on somebody else, thinking it's somebody else's problem. No, this is our problem. These aren't just numbers. These are names. Yes, the statistic 22 a day, it is fluctuating. But at the same time, it's still a name. It's a sergeant. It's a petty officer. It's a Marine. It's an airman. They're people.
Carla, do you think the because that is common. Every time, whatever kind of tragedy, unfortunately, and especially with suicide, you hear that, you know, oh, we had no idea. Do you think it's that people – I'm sure there are people who aren't showing signs, but do you think it's that people were just not paying close enough attention to each other as well?
Perhaps. You actually bring up a good point. I went through some questionable moments when I was on Stratton, and when I came forward with my sexual assault, somebody from Stratton contacted me and said, hey, was it so-and-so? I said, well, no, but thank you for asking. And she went on to say, I wanted to say something so bad, but I didn't want to make it my business. It's like, well, you should have made it your business. If you interfering may be the big change. Granted that's easier said than done. I can understand how that could probably feel intimidating. I don't want to get into it. This isn't my business. But what if it were you? What if you were the one struggling? What if you were the one dropping hints and nobody said anything? You just got ignored.
Yeah, what do you think, Carla, about the like the reporting process with the restricted and unrestricted reports? Is that, has that kind of taken, I guess, some of the pressure off reporting it? If for those that are concerned, with who's going to know who made the report, right? Does that, and they're very concerned about that to the point that they don't want their name done, almost like an anonymous report. Has that taken any of the pressure off and allowed them to access those resources?
Are you addressing more the sexual assault portion of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, the sexual yeah, assault portion. Yeah, on that side.
Okay, no worries. I'm probably not the best example because I wasn't thinking at the moment, you know, said person that assaulted me, he was texting me very dirty, sexually explicit things. I kind of broke down. I told him to stop, and he just did this whole apology thing and just like, what? No. So went to my shop. I was all by myself, try to get myself together because at first I wasn't going to say anything because I was convinced, nope, this is my fault. I didn't tell him to stop. I froze up. This is my fault. So, nope, not going to say anything. And this is before I learned about the whole grooming process. And this is before I realized how much I was manipulated. So when the EO found me, I just kind of blurted it out. So I unknowingly made an unrestricted report.
Right. You never had a chance to really make the decision. Right.
Yeah, so to answer your question, I'm having a tough time doing it just because every situation is different.
Right.
Because it also comes back to coping. When I was on Stratton, I went through a few sexual assaults, not even knowing that they were sexual assaults, as strange as it sounds. And I was too afraid to say anything because I thought, oh, this is my fault. I didn't say no. Even though I didn't want it, I didn't say no. So it's a really hard call. I'm trying to give you a good answer, and I can't.
You don't have to. Yeah, just a question.
Not every question has a good answer. I think it is such a tough subject, and it's such a big subject. I mean, I'm glad the
intimidation factor plays a huge part, though.
Mm-hmm.
And especially since the person that did it to me, he was such a high-ranking official, it's like, well, nobody's going to believe me anyway. That also plays a huge part in it. And if, you know, what I've noticed a lot, it's people that just get out of boot camp and come into the unit. And that's exactly what happened to me out of Stratton, because when I went to boot camp, we were taught, you know, your shipmates are your brothers and sisters and your mentors. You need to trust them and look up to them. Okay, so I was really naive going in. I had no idea that it was this bad. So, which is sad because, I mean, if I have a daughter and she wants to join the Coast Guard, I shouldn't have to say, make sure you don't get sexually assaulted. Watch out for these predators. Protect yourself. I shouldn't have to say that.
Right.
And if I had a son that joined the Coast Guard, I should have to tell him, hey, you watch yourself. You behave yourself around the ladies. You be respectful. We shouldn't have to say that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope we someday can get somewhere as a society that we're not there. I've always said, I've always said, I think that, you know, it's a great goal that hopefully someday we get to a point where there's just no sexual assault in the Coast Guard or in society. But I think the immediate goal needs to be that not a single one goes unreported, that we can remove those barriers, because evil tends to die when you expose it to daylight. And if we can change the culture enough, and I think we've done a good job, but we haven't gotten the whole way there yet, to make sure that there's none that happens that go unreported, so that we can kind of root it out at the source.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree.
That was deep,
I think it
though.
Is kind of ironic.
Really
when you look.
That was good.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah.
I think it's ironic that if you look at the PTSD ribbon, the awareness ribbon, the color of the PTSD ribbon and the sexual assault ribbon are both teal. And to me, that makes perfect sense.
Because one's connected to the other is what you're saying, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I really think fear of intimidation has a lot to do with reporting. And that goes for suicide and sexual assault. Absolutely.
Right, and I would say, you know, like, realize for anybody that's listening that may be struggling with that, right, for the reporting process, that, you know, there are two options right now within the service, restricted and unrestricted. If you are concerned about that, you could always make an unrestricted report. Yeah, and actually, you know, funny story, Bill over here is a victim advocate.
I'm gonna give my plug, Carla, if that's all right with you. I'm gonna talk for a second here. I don't want to talk over you at all. For everybody out there who's listening, if you're in the Coast Guard, if you're a spouse, if you're in any way connected to the Coast Guard, we do have those two options, like Phil said, the restricted and unrestricted reporting. Understand that if you tell anyone in the Coast Guard, other than some very specific people, it's going to be an unrestricted report. That shouldn't dissuade you from coming forward if you have an issue, but do understand that. And the people that you can give a restricted report to are any victim advocate, healthcare provider, or your SARC, your sexual assault response coordinator for your region. If you don't know who those people are, the information is available out there. I'm going to give a plug for, it's actually on the App Store. It's on Google Play and it's on the Apple App Store. It's the HSWL, Health, Safety, and Work Life app that the Coast Guard has out there. If you don't know who you need to contact, that information is all available in there. I suggest everybody, if you're in the Coast Guard, put that on your phone. There's a lot of stuff about also suicide awareness and stuff in there. you don't have to know all the answers, but it's really good if you have a way to get the answers. Rather than crush candy for 5 minutes, why not look at some of that stuff and have that information available to you?
Right, and I guarantee if you walk in any head or you see the the bulletin board at any Coast Guard unit, it's posted.
Right.
Guaranteed. It's there. And there's usually pretty expansive lists of numbers of people that you can call to make those unrestricted reports if you needed to. Very good. Carla, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, thank you so much for having me. I'm definitely very honored to be here.
No, we're honored to have you. Amazing work that you're doing to spread the word and to raise awareness and to get help for people. So much appreciate what you're doing for people out there that are struggling. And you have our full support, charging ahead. Anything that we can do to help you out, please just let us know.
Yeah, Carla, really, really appreciate your time. I think it was a valuable conversation we had. I am going to put one last plug in. I forgot to say to my earlier plug, and I apologize for that. Everybody out there, remember too that victims and perpetrators come in all shapes, sizes, ranks, and genders. So don't get one picture in your head. Everybody's different, and there's victims and there's perpetrators of all ranks and all genders. So look out for all your shipmates.
For sure. And hey, and if anybody's looking for Carla and her artwork, the Petty Officer to Pinup Artist Project, you can find her on Instagram at art.by.carla or on Facebook, which is her primary one. Just search for Art by Carla and it'll all be there. And I think you can make all your orders through direct messages. But please go check out the art if you haven't done so already. Definitely follow it because it sounds like there's some really cool stuff coming ahead, especially on the topic of mental health and how to recognize those symptoms. So great job, Carla. Thanks again. And please just let us know what we can do. When that Ruck March comes up, we expect a phone call, and
absolutely,
I expect Bill to get his shoes on and tie them.
Well, if I have a back on my back, I might need you to tie my shoes for me, Phil.
It's going to be a race, brother. Right. Just letting you know.
Your ankles are already together.
I know, yeah. I may have to use my little scooter thing, but we'll make it.
All right, Carla, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks for all the work you're doing to highlight these issues.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. I greatly appreciate it.
Cool, Carla. Have a great weekend.
All right, you guys too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Another one to check out is the Always Ready Collective, which delivers art by and for some daring fighters of the sea. Head over to Etsy, Facebook, or Instagram and search Always Ready Collective to check out their Coast Guard and Maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. You won't be disappointed. Anyone who gets one of their designs inked on their body will get featured on their feed and can be sent a care package on the house. Find a design you like, some blank canvas, and get it done. Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform and like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.